Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, it's Monday, so I'm taking your questions. The Democrat Civil War, does that mean that there's a new party being formed? What is going on college campuses, and what should parents do about it? Also, what exactly is the church's proper role in politics? I make a compelling argument that many of your pastors probably have not told you recently. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, it's tpusa.com. And again, when you support us at charliekirk.com/support, think of every dollar as a young person that will listen to this. Lives will be changed. Minds will be turned. The country will be saved. Thanks to the work that we are doing here on this program. It's not just me. You're supporting our entire staff, our travel budget. You're supporting our production costs and the resources we need to bring you two podcasts a day, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. So pray about it, think about it, and say, you know, this podcast has made my life a little better. If it has, please support us at charliekirk.com/support. We are giving away 10 signed copies of The MAGA Doctrine. So type in Charlie Kirk Show, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star review, screenshot it and email it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com. AMA Monday. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
If you guys are listening to this program and you're not listening on good earbuds, I got a solution. The whole Charlie Kirk team, they wear Raycons. Raycon. They're wearing them right now. They're wearing them when they sleep. They're wearing them when they work out. They're wearing them when they're running. They're wearing them when they're editing. That's because the new everyday E25 earbuds are the best ones yet. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, a more compact design, noise isolating fit. The company was co-founded by a bunch of people that I don't like mentioning anymore because they're not very good people. But anyway, it's a good product. Give them a try. Raycon has a 45-day free return policy, so you can make sure the wireless earbuds are for you. For a limited time, get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Kirk. That's buyraycon.com/Kirk. For a special 15% discount on Raycon wireless earbuds, make sure to check it out now while the deal is still running. Buyraycon.com/Kirk. Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. I am taking your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. You guys can also listen to us live and watch us live every single day from 12 Eastern to 2 Eastern on our Facebook and YouTube channel. And also, we have exclusive podcast commentary on top of that that you don't even hear on the radio show and you do not hear on the live stream. And I want to thank all of you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. charliekirk.com/support. That is where you guys are able to help support our program to reach millions of young people every single month. So let's get right into it. The first question is Isaac J. from Iowa. Hi, Charlie. I had a question about my pastor's statement, in which I believe is partly true. He said, and I might be paraphrasing a little bit, there are many ways the Democratic platform seems Christian, but are absolutely not. And there are many ways the Republican platform seems Christian, but are absolutely not. I've listened to the top 11 reasons why Christians should vote for Trump. However, could you please help me debunk that statement and expand more on both of the platforms? Isaac J. from Iowa. I don't really know what your pastor is getting at here. I can best guess that the pastor is inferring that some of the wishes and wants and desires of the Democrat Party might align with a compassionate Christian worldview. However, when you look into what government helping people actually does, it hurts people. Government helping people has not actually made people wealthier or richer. The more people that have gone on government assistance over the last couple decades, the more likely they are to stay in poverty. So if you want to help people, you should want them to get off of government assistance. You should want them to not receive government welfare or a check from the taxpayer. And so the idea is intentions versus results. It is tempting to want to support a Democrat nominee or a Democrat platform that would say, we're going to give health care for everybody. But is that really going to help them? It might help them in the short term get some sort of delivery of health care. However, giving somebody a government benefit does not make them more likely to be self-sustainable, to be self-reliant, and quite honestly, has not helped communities that have had high increases of Medicaid, welfare, or government assistance or taxpayer assistance be able to break out of the spell of poverty. For example, since Lyndon Baines Johnson passed the Great Society Act in the mid-1960s, the more money we have spent to try and abolish poverty, poverty has won. The greatest poverty elimination program is a job, is not locking down your country, and is also having entrepreneurs employ people in communities across the country to be able to lift people out of the current socioeconomic circumstance they're in. That best aligns with the Christian worldview of a man shall not work, he shall not eat. And secondly, any person out there that tries to make a biblical or theological or Christian defense of abortion, I do not hold that view at all whatsoever. We have had 61 million abortions since Roe versus Wade, and I do not hold the view that you can possibly hold a theological belief and also be pro-abortion. So thank you, Isaac, for the question. Check out the podcast we did over the weekend where we touch on some of these topics as well. Thanks so much, Isaac. Thank you. And you win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. Next question here. Charlie, they just released the topics for the debate next Thursday in Nashville. Fighting the Chinese coronavirus, American families, race in America, climate change, national security, and leadership. What are your thoughts on these topics? Where is the economy or China? Does this advantage or disadvantage Trump, and how can he best respond to these topics? Wayne from St. Petersburg. Well, first of all, he should not answer the questions that are asked of him. I mean, all these topics are so incredibly slanted from a activist media perspective. Race in America, is that really a top-tier issue in our country? Of course not. It's not a top 100 issue in our country. It is a manufactured from upper middle class white liberals that have a lot of money and are very bored. And that's basically where this entire conversation is coming from in our country. People are contemplating suicide. One out of four of young people in our country have contemplated suicide in the last 90 days. Alcoholism, depression, joblessness, 100,000 small businesses have gone under in the last 6 months. There is a real human cost to the draconian lockdowns. So it is a massive issue that is not being talked about. So if under these kind of topics that have been presented, though, to the president, the one in particular that I think the president needs to zero in on is national security. The president has had an incredible record of success negotiating foreign peace deals between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. Looks like he's going to bring Saudi Arabia to the table to sign the peace deal. He's holding Iran in check. The embassy has been moved to Jerusalem, the recognition of the Golan Heights, not to mention holding the Chinese Communist Party accountable. In more ways than one, he has been a phenomenally successful president abroad. So I think that the president needs to zero in on how he has kept our country safer. He has not declared endless misadventure wars overseas. And the president has been firm in his commitment to defending the American worker, defending forgotten America, and also ending the endless wars. I cannot reinforce that enough. Joe Biden started wars overseas endlessly and frequently. It is Donald Trump that has been ending those wars. Climate change, really? That's really going to be a topic of the next debate. We have talked about climate change in every single one of these debates. It just goes to show how slanted the Commission on Presidential Debates is. How about this? Can we have a debate topic on the opioid crisis in our country that kills over 50,000 Americans every single year? Can we have a debate topic on suicide and depression? Can we have a debate topic on how churches are being closed, but cannabis dispensaries have remained wide open? Can we have a debate topic on the human cost of lockdowns? Can we have a debate topic on how young people are going to be the first generation to inherit a less free, less prosperous, and less, let's say, equal under the law country than the generations before? But instead, they're hyper-focusing on climate change and race in America. President Donald Trump has to focus on every one of the major issues that is pertinent to him convincing persuadable voters. President Donald Trump, in his debate, has to say that the Harris administration will shut down your churches. The Harris administration will lock down the country again. This will have a twofold impact. Number one, Joe Biden will take great offense at this. Make him make the argument that he'll be in charge, not Kamala Harris. Number two, we all know Kamala Harris will actually be in charge. Kamala Harris is the most liberal senator in the United States Senate. Kamala Harris is disliked amongst persuadable and moderate voters, and Kamala Harris must become the primary focus of most of the messaging that is going to be brought to the forefront of this American political conversation. So when Kamala Harris takes over the White House, when Kamala Harris becomes president of the United States, which is what will happen if Joe Biden wins, how do you think she's going to be on the economy? How do you think she's going to be on China? She will be a transactional machine politician that will not hold our adversaries accountable and will kowtow to the corporatist interests of the Democrat Party. So Wayne from St. Petersburg, congratulations, you win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. I have to tell you that I do not think this helps Donald Trump with the current selection of questions. But how he responds to it will be the real trick. How he responds to that sequence of questions will matter most to how he actually is able to win the debate. I think if the president performs like he did in the town hall, he will win the election. I believe this debate will be the most important debate in presidential history. I'm going to share something with you that no one else in the mainstream press has said that is a good sign for Donald Trump. Any persuadable voters that are still out there, I give very little to any chance that they're going to vote for Joe Biden. Typically, the late-breaking voters go against the incumbent. That is typically the laws of politics. I think it is the exact opposite in this election. I think that there are many people that have not yet made up their mind, and those people are waiting for a reason to vote for Donald Trump. If you're against Donald Trump, you're against Donald Trump. There's no way that another 18 days of Donald Trump is going to make you be like, you know what? Now I'm against Donald Trump. After the impeachment, almost going to war with Iran, allegedly, the Mueller investigation, the tax returns, the $2 billion in negative ads, is something in the next 18 days really going to turn you against Donald Trump? Of course not. But something in the next 18 days can absolutely turn you against Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Absolutely. So President Donald Trump has to embrace the late-breaking strategy that we are in the last moments of this presidential campaign. And President Trump has to give a clarion call and a ask to bring swing and persuadable voters into his category and motivate his base and get center-right voters to vote for him. He can do it. President Trump can absolutely win this election. President Trump should win this election. It's up to President Trump to win this debate and bring people in the middle over to his side. Getting in shape doesn't have to be about losing a specific amount of weight or a magic number on the scale. It's about building healthier habits and feeling better about yourself. So that's why I like Noom, N-O-O-M. They do physical, psychological, and social movements to make you a better person. Specific lessons you learned about psychology or habits, the ease of just 10 minutes a day, the tone of your program, or anything you loved. It is so easy to log your food, and it's also very flexible. Noom is not a diet. It's a healthy and easy-to-use way of life. With Noom, it doesn't tell you what to do or what not to do. It teaches you how to look inside your own mind and make better decisions for yourself. You don't have to change it all in one day. Small steps make big progress. Sign up today for your trial at Noom.com/Charlie. What do you have to lose except that extra 15 pounds? Visit Noom.com/Charlie. Noom.com/Charlie. Hey, Charlie, my pastor says that we do not get involved in politics. He says that my church should remain outside of politics. What do you have to make of this? I know that you're very politically involved and also an outspoken Christian. Thanks so much, Terry from Colorado. Well, thank you, Terry from Colorado. Your pastor is wrong. Your pastor is wrong biblically and morally. Number one, I believe in comprehensive Christianity, not compartmentalized Christianity. I don't think there is anything where we should not get actively involved as Christians, whether it be music, arts, entertainment, and yes, government. But secondly, I also believe that this is a anti-biblical and anti-theological view. Tyndale, when he was translating the Bible, and he came under great condemnation and great accusations of heresy from the institutionalized Catholic hierarchy when he did this. And I'm not against Catholics. There are so many amazing Catholics that listen to our podcast, but it's just a historical fact. And when Tyndale was translating the Bible away from Latin into English, he believed that biblical literacy was a major problem. And when Tyndale went back to the Koine Greek, the words that were originally written in the New Testament, Jesus Christ clearly said to his followers, his disciples. He said, on this rock build my, and most people say church. That's actually not correct. It's on this rock build my ecclesia. That's right. On this rock build my ecclesia. Now, if we actually look at the original definition of what a ecclesia is or was, an ecclesia was a secular term. It was a Greek secular term. Jesus did not use synagogue. He did not use temple. Instead, he used the term ecclesia. So what exactly was a ecclesia? Well, unfortunately, many English translators originally said, I will build my church. But however, it's a mistake to substitute in an institutional vision of a church centered on just religion for what Jesus wanted us to do in the public square, which was to transform the whole agenda of life, not just creating a walled-off spiritual realm. And so, for example, an ecclesia was actually a gathering, that's right, a physical gathering of a Greek city-state. An ecclesia was a whole body of citizens in a free city-state, called out by the herald for discussion on decision of public business. So why would Jesus tell us to get involved in the public business, to not just be compartmentalized or walled off, but tell us to get directly into the public square? And I encourage all of you Christians out there to use this against your pastors, because they're theologically wrong and they are misleading you if they tell you not to get involved in politics. We are commanded by Jesus Christ to get involved in politics. In fact, the two words that unified the Greek ecclesia, the secular ecclesia, was the Greek term isonomia and the Greek term eleutheria. Those two words, isonomia, meant equality, eleutheria, freedom. What two countries are founded on the ideas of equality and freedom? America. America was founded on the ideas that built ecclesia, that Jesus Christ told us that you should build on this rock that which the Greek city-state embodied. And so any pastor that tells you or is afraid of engaging in politics, in my theological interpretation, I'm not the only one that holds this view, I'm just articulating it, is not biblical. That's right. They are not following the Bible. In fact, they are cowering to fear. And if you look what Tyndale and Martin Luther did in the early stage of the Protestant church, it is very interesting how Tyndale was actually arrested, tried, condemned, and murdered for translating the Bible correctly. And for any Christian out there that says it really doesn't matter if we get involved in politics or not, well, two words for you, Nero and Diocletian. Nero and Diocletian were Roman emperors that were absolute martyrs against Christians. Do you care about Christians being persecuted? You should. The Bible tells us to do that. Why is your pastor not speaking out against Christians being persecuted, against pastors being arrested? If your pastor has remained silent, remained closed, or was closed throughout the summer, they were in direct defiance to the theological mandate to, as the Bible says, do not fear. More times than not, God tells his followers in the Old Testament, be not afraid. And so too many pastors in America have cowered to the secular line of thinking that the church should not be involved in politics. And just another thought on Tyndale and Luther. I'm reading a whole book on Tyndale and Luther, and they completely transformed Europe and helped create Western civilization. And through the Gutenberg printing press, they brought the Bible to the language of the peasants. The language of the peasants was English. Latin was the language of the priests and of Rome. As soon as the Bible was translated to English, you saw the greatest democratization of thinking and the greatest democratization of people rising up and wanting to be involved in the civic process. And some other pastors will say, well, we're not allowed to defy authority. Well, then how do they square Daniel 6:10? It says clearly, now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Now, as a pretext, if you go through Daniel 6 through 9, it says very clearly that King Darius basically put a hit out on anyone that followed the rabbinical or Jewish laws. Daniel did it anyway. Daniel leaned in and he opened up his window, and three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God just as he has done before. Then these men went as a group, found Daniel praying, asking God for help, went to the king, got him arrested, eventually threw him in the lion's den. Daniel knew what was being asked of him was tyrannical, and he opened up the window and he said, I'm going to do it anyway. Where were the pastors that were like Daniel during this lockdown? These pastors were cowards that didn't open up their church. And the pastors like Ken Graves and James Cadiz and Rob McCoy and Jack Hibbs, the list goes on. Mike McClure, God bless them. But we need to have pastors that have the spirit of Daniel, not the fear of the secular left. And so many of these pastors I've interfaced with, they'd much rather collect their tithes and their offerings through live stream than stand clearly for the reopening of the church. The church was originally told to us by Jesus Christ to be political. He used the term intentionally. Jesus Christ said, on this rock, get involved in all things. And that includes civic government. I encourage you to just take this podcast, send it to your pastor. They can contact me directly. And if they have any sort of disagreement, I'd love to know what biblical translation they're using and what sort of contorted justification they have to try and justify a non-political and closed church during these very important times. Hey, Charlie, can you talk more about what's going on college campuses? I am convinced that I should not send my kids to college. They are in high school right now. Can you just really tell me how bad things actually are? This is Brad from Alabama. Thank you, Brad from Alabama. You win a signed copy of the New York Times bestseller, The MAGA Doctrine. And this segues nicely to our thinker.org book of the week, thinkr.org/Charlie, book of the week, thinker.org. Book of the week is The Coddling of the American Mind, How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas Are Setting Up a Generation for Failure. Now, look, I love thinker.org. I love partnering with them. You're able to digest important books and big ideas in minutes. You put on your headphones. You might be working out. You might be running. You might be lifting weights. But at thinker.org/Charlie, thinkr.org/Charlie, you are able to consume these amazing books. Our book is The Coddling of the American Mind. We'll go into it in just a second, but there's David and Goliath. There's Outliers, The Abolition of Man, The Splendid and the Vile, God in the Dock, and Miracles, and so much more. So I encourage you guys to go to thinker.org/Charlie. If you want to explore big ideas and go deep for learning, it's thinker.org/Charlie. So The Coddling of the American Mind by Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff says there are three great untruths that have begun to coalesce into a cult of safetyism in the United States. These untruths fly in the face of ancient wisdom and modern research and have proven harmful to the individuals and groups who have imbibed them. Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt team up to illuminate these untruths and their deleterious effects, as well as suggest some remedies. So number one, more than just resilient, children are anti-fragile. Malcolm Gladwell wrote an entire book on anti-fragility. Also, they talk about the belief that what doesn't kill them makes us weaker, has fostered the rise in paranoid safetyism. This is probably the most important book if you want to realize why our country handled this pandemic so poorly and why we retreated to safetyism and we did not embrace courage, bravery, or wisdom, but instead retreated to fear. Also, the book talks about making warnings about unreliable emotions are as old as humanity itself. So perhaps it's not a good idea to make them a basis for dialogue in universities. Universities have completely damaged our country. We deal with this quite often at Turning Point USA and ProfessorWatchlist.org. You guys should check it out, ProfessorWatchlist.org. And at Turning Point USA, you guys are able to get engaged, get involved, and we play offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war. But I can tell you that the left hates the idea that there are other ideas. It's not that they disagree with us. It's that they don't want our ideas to exist at all. They want to use whatever power at their disposal to squelch opposition opinion and to go after anyone that might disagree with them even slightly. And what happens at the university is they have emotion-based tribunals where they do not have logical thinking. If I were to say the most qualified people and applicants that we have that come work for us at Turning Point USA dropped out of college or they didn't go to college at all whatsoever, or they completely rejected everything that they learned in college. Anyone that comes to work for me and they say that college is a meaningful experience, they usually don't last very long. In fact, here on the Charlie Kirk Show, our best workers are people that are like, yeah, college was a complete waste of time. And that kind of should tell you that maybe college isn't preparing our young people to be able to succeed in our country. It continues by saying, the untruth that the world is comprised of good people and evil people is a natural but polarizing tendency. Also, the great untruths of fragility, emotional reasoning, and us versus them have flourished in the soil of helicopter parenting, social media, and the decline of a child's play. Raising kids with wisdom means responsibly encouraging independence in action and thought. And finally, universities can encourage wisdom by putting the pursuit of truth before social justice and by upholding free speech and inquiry as quintessential to the life of the university. That is the coddling of the American mind, how good intentions and bad ideas are setting up a generation of failure. Our book of the week at thinker.org/Charlie, thinkr.org/Charlie. Lauren asks a great question here. Congratulations, Lauren. You win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. I was recently in a group of leftists who claimed that you, quote, can't be racist towards a white person because they were not oppressed. I would like to know how you would have responded to that question. And if you have any advice on how to maturely handle the situation without starting a fight. Thank you so much, Lauren. Congratulations, Lauren. You win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. This is a phenomenal question. What is racism? What is racism? Racism is one person of any race hating or judging another person of another race. The left doesn't view that as racism. The left views racism as a power struggle. The left views certain people immune to racism, and some people automatically racist. You understand that's a racist idea to believe in that. So my advice to you, Lauren, is first just get the term straight. Ask your friends, what is racism? They will say that racism is a power struggle, and you say, no, it's not. You're talking about something completely different. You're talking about tribal warfare. I'm talking about individuals being prejudiced against another group of individuals just based on the color of their skin. Where do you get your definition from? Where do you derive that definition from? And they'll quote some literature and all that and say, that's just not true. Look at the Webster definition right there. A belief that race is fundamental detriment of human traits and capacities and racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. So for example, when black people tell white people to take a knee because they did something wrong, that's racist. When you tell young people that are 8 and 9 years old that you have privilege based on the color of your skin, white privilege, that's racist. Categorizing people based on skin color and judging them based on that skin color is racist. Where the left believes, and this is rooted in critical race theory, that it is actually a struggle between groups. They believe that it is actually all black people are oppressed and all white people are not, and therefore anything that is racist is the proliferation of that society. And that's kind of where you get to the second definition here of the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition, the systemic oppression of a racial group to the social, economic, and political advantage of another. Well, that's not what's happened in America. It's not. Black people have every opportunity to succeed in this country, and any black person or any white person that doesn't, it's on them. It is. If you don't make good choices, I'm sorry. And we should do some things to try to make the circumstance better for you. We should try to fix schools and all those sorts of things. We're still individuals. We are not tribal groups. So what is racism? Is it hating another person based on the color of their skin? Or is it a power struggle? If you believe it's a power struggle, then yes, white people cannot be racist. But only if you believe the power struggle is inherently racial. I don't believe in a power struggle. The only power struggle I believe is maybe a very small set of leftist elitists that are running our country. Maybe that's the only power struggle I could possibly believe in. But generally, and most specifically, this idea of a broad-based power struggle in our country is completely baseless, especially based on skin color. So thank you, Lauren, for your question. You win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. Just understand, when someone from the left is talking about racism, they are not talking to you about the type of racism that you and I grew up believing, which is any person of any skin color hating another person of another skin color. That is the true definition of racism. Hi, Charlie. Love the show. On Mondays, I know you answer your listeners' questions, and I thought I'd send you some this week instead of just being a passive listener. Well, great, Rachel. You want a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine because you emailed us freedom@charliekirk.com. In the past year alone, I have been asked in 3 of my graduate-level classes to give introductions stating my name, gender pronouns, and cultural identity. I'm not afraid to share who I am, she, her, hers, and a Christian, but I've seen classmates apologize for being white, and teachers have discussed that being a woman makes you a victim of trauma. I'm deeply saddened that these conversations is becoming common and would like advice or talking points on how to address this concern in the college institution. Thank you, Rachel. Man, if parents are listening to this, what are you doing sending your kids to school learning from this garbage? That you're a woman, that you have trauma because you're a woman, and that you have to say your gender pronouns? It's so destructive. This is how the country is going to fall apart. So what advice can I give you? I'm deeply saddened that this conversation is becoming common and would like advice. No one should apologize for being white. How clearly do I have to say this? You do not have to apologize for something you did not do. You do not have to apologize for something that a relative did. You don't have to apologize for something that someone of your same skin color did. Nor do you get an award for someone of the same skin color did for you. For example, if your grandfather got the Congressional Medal of Honor, you do not also get that Congressional Medal of Honor. It's not how it works. If your grandfather stormed the beaches of Normandy and liberated the European continent, if you sit in your basement all day and act like Hunter Biden, you do not get a Congressional Medal of Honor. Therefore, if your skin color is white, you do not have to apologize unless you've actually been a racist. And it's also a lot more nuance than that. What about the white people that died to free the slaves in the Civil War? What about my relatives, my ancestors, that fought in the American Civil War? Isaiah Kirk. I have a picture of him hanging in my home. Fought in the American Civil War. Guess what? It doesn't make me a good person. I don't get any sort of points for that. And I have nothing to apologize for. Neither do you. There have been racist white people in our country's history. There have been racist black people too. There have been racist Mexicans and racist Hispanics. Anyone who apologizes for their race needs a lot of help. And I don't know the best advice I can give you, Rachel, but anyone who's doing that is not going to be successful in this country, because you're immediately starting from a position that you have something to apologize for just based on your existence. I had somebody the other day email me. They say, are you going to apologize for being a fascist? And I said, first of all, I'm not a fascist, so I'm not going to apologize for that. Second of all, you asking me to apologize for being something I'm not is incredibly fascist. Third of all, the fascist dilemma in America is a supply and demand problem. The great Douglas Murray mentioned this once, and I want Douglas Murray in our podcast. He's amazing. In fact, I think he's in America right now doing a tour, so we should try and reach out to him to come to Phoenix. He's one of the brightest minds I've had an opportunity to listen from. Douglas Murray said it best. He said, there's a supply and demand problem with fascists in America. He said, there's an incredible demand from the left to try to convince themselves that there are fascists and racists on every corner, and there's a very limited supply. Therefore, any person who pops their head out as a racist fascist gets the equivalent of the price getting raised, they become incredibly popular instantaneously because there's so few of them. And there's such a incredible thirst and a desire to try and satisfy this theory that there's a racist and that there are fascists on every single corner. It's rather tragic, actually. And so there's a lot of things to unpack here, but anyone who believes that we're a racist country doesn't know our history. Anyone who apologizes for something they did not do or something they're not responsible for is indulging in postmodern critical race theory, perpetual atonement. What an awful existence that is, to be a slave to something you didn't even do. This is a new concept, actually, because those of us that believe in the Christian tradition, we believe that you could be a slave to your sin. It's kind of new for me to think that you're going to be a slave to something you didn't do. Like, you're going to be held hostage by how you look? Like, really? Like, not by a lie you told or a thing you stole, but you're going to have to feel bad for who you are. Isn't that the whole idea, that post-bullying culture that we are supposed to create in high school? That you don't have to feel bad because you're overweight. You don't have to feel bad because you're dyslexic. And I think there's some validity to all that, by the way. But now we're kind of reversing it. Like, you must apologize and you must feel guilt because of how God made you. Well, they don't believe in God, so that would kind of explain why they feel that way. So thank you, Rachel, for your question. It just brings me such incredible, just disgust is one word, and just frustration towards what has happened to higher education in this country. It is truly the death of the academy. Charlie, you talk often about a Democrat civil war brewing. My question is, what does that end up looking like? Will we see something like Teddy Roosevelt breaking away from the Republican Party and founding the Bull Moose Party? Or will Democrats break into a legitimate factions that would be sustainable in the way TR's party wasn't? Thanks, love the radio show, by the way. Tanya from Harding, Minnesota. Thank you, Tanya. I just want to reiterate my thanks to those of you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. At charliekirk.com/support, you guys really help keep this engine going, and you allow us to do 2 episodes a day, 2 hours of radio a day, 2 hours of live streaming a day, as well as speaking all across the country. God bless you. You guys are totally amazing. I think that the Democrat Civil War is going to happen internally at first. I'm very optimistic about Republicans' chances moving forward. The Democrats have entertained and platformed such malevolent and insidious, baseless, and dangerous ideas that once Donald Trump is gone, which is the only glue that is keeping the Democrat Party together, their entire party will disintegrate. Their party will turn into the Bolsheviks versus the Mensheviks. Their party will turn into the post-Tito Yugoslavia, where the Bosnians were fighting the Croatians, who were fighting the Serbians, who were fighting the Albanians, who are all together fighting to reclaim the unified Yugoslavia. What happens when a patriarch or a dictator falls? There is always bedlam. And by no means am I calling Trump a dictator, but I am saying that the pathological possession that the Democrat Party has towards Donald Trump is the only thing that keeps them unified. As soon as Donald Trump gets removed from the equation, either in victory or in defeat, there will be an immense power struggle. And AOC and Tlaib and Bernie Sanders, they are going to want more power than they have currently because they are going to feel like they were gypped, and they will be angry if they lose, and they will be motivated if they win. And just as Democrats have just run this ridiculous ad, let's play this ad, by the way, and bleep out the swearing. This is just as Democrats' advertisement to try to get Donald Trump defeated. It's pretty pathetic. Play tape.
For 6 months, everything is COVID this and COVID that. I lost my job because we're all trying to stay at home to get this under control. And our president does what? Are you fucking kidding me? Look, maybe you don't like the other guy running for president. I get it. I don't like anyone right now. But could you do me a favor? Take 10 minutes this November and f***ing vote. Can you do that? Can you do that for me, please? Oh, that is it. Wait till your father gets home.
And so the Justice Democrats are just kind of half cashing it in. They don't even believe in Joe Biden. They do hate Donald Trump, but they believe in a much more fundamental, broad, magnanimous, and motivated revolution that is based in a complete and total fundamental transformation of our country. So I don't know what it will look like. I do think that if AOC and Bernie Sanders get motivated enough and they get betrayed enough by the Democrat Party, it could splinter. The splinter becomes more likely if Donald Trump wins. If Donald Trump wins, the splintering of different parties becomes almost inevitable, where they break into their own factions and their own subset groups. And this is one thing I've always encouraged Republicans to do. I've encouraged Republicans not to break into micro parties, because the first party to do that will give the other party a hall pass towards political victory in the future. So thanks so much, Tanya. Deeply appreciate the question. And thank you guys for all emailing your questions at freedom@charliekirk.com. Listen to our sister episode with Kimberly Klasick, who is in person here at the Charlie Kirk Show. And please continue to support us at charliekirk.com/support. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. We play offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war. We want our kids to love America again. That's tpusa.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. Another big week in store. We're going to be working our tail off to save our country and get our president reelected. God bless you. Talk to you soon. Thanks so much.